And now, our feature presentation.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to No Flicks Given. It is now our third episode in, and it's again the podcast that is the conflagration of the Give It Five boys, Matt and Frank, and the Fix-A-Flick boys, Connor and Peter, and we've decided to join our forces and come together to talk about movies, because we realized that we really enjoy doing that a lot, so just keep on keeping on. This week, it is Connor's pick. So, Connor, do you have a submission for us to go watch?
Submitted for the approval of the group. Has anybody seen Cube?
Oh, I have, yes.
No, I don't know what Cube is.
Oh, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Gentlemen. I am, for the sake of spoilers, I'm not going to tell you much about what Cube is about, but suffice it to say, it is a science fiction horror film from 1997, made in Canada.
Ooh, that's Event Horizon territory. I don't feel good about this.
You're going to be really pissed when you find out Event Horizon's my pick next week.
Cube. 26 rooms high, 26 rooms across,
17,576 rooms.
Does anybody remember how they got here?
Why would they throw innocent people in here? Are we being punished?
There's a way in here, so there's gotta be a way out.
Do you think they'd go to all the trouble to build this thing if we could just walk out?
Take a good long look around. But I got a feeling it's looking at us.
We have about 3 days without food and water before we're too weak to move.
I just want to wake up.
I looked in the room down there and something almost cut my head off.
Motion detectors integrated into the walls. Tough to spot.
You're not getting out of here.
Yes, we are.
There is no way out of here.
We need to get around the trap.
They're identified by prime numbers.
Figure it out.
I can't.
I'm not dying in a rat maze.
No more talking. No more guessing. You gotta save yourselves from yourselves.
What the hell's going on?
We haven't been moving in circles, the rooms have.
We are the key.
The cube
is us.
So, guys, Cube.
Wow.
You fucking asshole.
How exactly do you feel?
I feel gross.
I will say this.
I feel French.
It's very French. But if people have gotten this far, I do feel like this is one of those movies that you should turn this off right now and go watch it, because it's really, really easy to find. Yeah. And you should not know anything about it going in.
Yes.
It's literally free on YouTube.
Yes.
In a not piratey way. Like, it is legally on YouTube for free for you to watch.
Yeah. So I highly encourage you, if you are still listening to this, pause this, go bring it up on YouTube. It's one of those things that you just got to watch once. I think you only need to the once.
I will only have watched it once. That's what I've decided.
I mean, I have now seen it twice.
Since he told you about it, or you've seen it before?
I saw it before.
Oh, okay. So I had never... I think I had heard a movie was called Cube, but I... And maybe I remember the cover. Like,
interesting.
The poster. But I...
Question for the group. How much time did we collectively spend on the Sci-Fi Channel circa 1999-2000?
Before Pornhub. Yeah, all the time.
Because I feel like, because Cube was in heavy rotation on the Sci-Fi Channel.
So this is so not my bag, baby. Like, this is so, this is so in the category. First of all, I'll say, I liked it more than I didn't like it. I'm going to say
okay.
that. But
okay.
I was cursing your name out loud multiple times. So, but I will say Event this Horizon, is Frank. That whenever we get into it, this is like Event Horizon level for me, where it's like, it's just, I don't know, like the artistic side of it falls into an angsty side. There's that, there's something about where it just like sacrifices realism for like the shot, yeah. a bit, but like, and just the gratuitousness of it. Like generally I don't really get like, grossed out in any way, and it wasn't too bad, but like
did you tag the director, Frank?
So I'm gonna say first of all that I have decided to, because we're all gonna take different tracks with this, I haven't done a lick of research, so I get to be the one to ask the dumb questions today. Cool. I don't know who directed this. I am assuming it's the person who did what's that fucking movie with the same guy from the intro? It's a French movie.
No, it's not Jean-Pierre Jeunet. It is, no,
did
it's
he
not
do,
Jean-Pierre Jeunet.
Did he do
not,
the one
it's
with
not
like
City of Lost Children? It's not Delicatessen.
City of Lost Children is exactly yeah. the movie I was thinking of because I saw that
yeah.
guy.
With just
the,
because, you know, yeah, Julian Richings.
Malnourished Lex Luthor, whatever that actor
Julian
is.
Julian Richings. He's a gift okay. to us all.
And it is French. Yeah. It was so French.
It's more Canadian. Than that, Frank. It's French Canadian.
Yes.
Ugh. Double
There's
whammy.
No Canada like French
but
Canada.
It was so. So European feeling yes. that I was convinced before they started talking that we were either getting subtitles or it was dubbed. There was no way I had no expectation that this was going to be in English, filmed in English.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that Julian Richings, who plays the first character that we see, I forget what his name is, because I'm that bad with names that I Alderson, the bald guy that gets
yes.
Fenced to yeah. death. Yeah, he's a Canadian. He's a British Canadian actor. So he's, even though he's been in a lot of Jeunet's stuff.
Is that the guy from Lost Children?
I don't know if he was City of Lost Children. I don't think so. But he has a very City of Lost Children face. I'm not yeah. seeing it in his Wikipedia page.
But that intro, I think it was like the third shot of the movie made me that was my 5 minute mark, was like literally the third shot when he opens a door and it's another identical room, and I'm like, I know exactly what we're gonna get in for. This is gonna be fucking brutal. I'm gonna have multiple times where I'm like, how is this gonna last the runtime?
Yeah,
that was my thing. I got 20 minutes in and I was like, we've got to be like at least halfway through.
Yeah,
like they cannot yeah. stay in here the whole time.
Yeah, yeah, that's something that I did that didn't catch. I mean, I've seen this movie multiple times over the years just because it's been on it was back in the days of cable. It was on
yeah.
the channels that I frequented, and I didn't realize until this viewing that you get to the point where they find the outside of the cube, like the mm-hmm. big gap between the interior cube and the exterior cube, and you're only a third of the way through the movie. There's another half an hour to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a short film. It's 90 minutes long. Peter, as ever, whenever we watch a spoopy movie,
I need to hear this. I was curious about this the whole time.
I need to do a Peter experiences dread check in. Cool.
Oh God. So, I was okay. Mostly because there was the opportunities for dread. There was only really one scene where I had even the chance to like feel dread.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was shocked. Like especially the acid scene with
yeah.
Ren.
Yeah.
That was pretty brutal. And then the first kill with the laser fence, and then
when he gets Resident Evil'd.
That's correct. But the only other time that I felt dread was in the sound room, where you know they figured out that any sound would trip off.
Oh,
yeah,
possibly the best single scene of the movie.
I didn't care for it as a scene, but it was the only part where I was like, oh shit, no.
Well, but I think that the strength of this movie is sequences where the characters are problem solving and you're dealing with the strengths and weaknesses of each individual person
yeah.
as they're trying, because like they have to work together, and how are they going to get from this, you know, it's like levels in a video game. It's like, how do we get from this one to the next one? Like, oh, some of the rules have changed, or they've added on a level of complication, and you're trying to, it's, you know, it's the rats in a maze, or like trying to solve a puzzle type of thing. Right. That stuff had me completely checked out.
And something that I noticed a lot watching this time around was how in this movie, how this movie is in so many ways like the opposite of competency porn. Where it's not necessarily that the characters are incompetent or that they don't know how to solve the problem. It's just that they keep getting in their own way and not wanting to play to like work as a team. Like they all hate each other so much that it makes the team unable to be competent as a whole.
Oh yeah,
yes.
And that's something that I wanted to talk a little bit about. These characters are assholes.
Yeah,
everyone sucks.
Yes, this is such a nihilistic movie, and let's get into the characters a little bit.
Yeah,
I'm gonna blank on some of their names, but we have cop guy,
Quentin,
conspiracy theorist, doctor lady. Who I'm like, why do you have two doctor things? Lady. Just be one
Holloway.
Thing.
Yeah,
why do you have two things? We have the laid back, reluctant hero who's also involved. Everyone has like multiple things going on with.
Well, that's kind of the thing.
Yes, and then there is normal, like, almost you think it's love interest, and then she's like, no, the smartest mathematician outside of being, like, someone like Rain Man, and then you have Rain Man.
Levin and Kazan.
All named after prisons, according to the Wikipedia page.
Yep.
I love an obscure sci-fi film like this where you'll get, like, a weird subsection. It's like prison connection of character names, because somebody's thought through it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I thought Kazan was after the filmmaker.
No, Kazan, according to the Wikipedia, is after a special psychiatric hospital in Kazan, Russia.
Yeah. Oh, God. Which I mean, we've gotten this far into it, Frank. The director was Vincenzo Natale.
Why do I know that name?
You can see him doing the math in his head.
did a little movie in the Audis that caught some attention called Splice.
Wait.
Where the pianist fucks an alien.
He did Splice?
Yes, he did Splice.
He's done a lot of TV since then, though. Yeah. He's done Westworld. He's done Lock and Key, The Stand, The Strain, which is a perfect show that he should be on. American Gods, Wayward Pines, Hannibal, Orphan Black. Like he's done a lot of, like, you know, competent to prestige TV.
Yes, it's predominantly also shot in Canada, which is like the cast is also a veritable who's who of like Canadian genre fiction actors.
It is. I mean, for a movie that's basically in variations of the same room for 90 whole minutes,
mm-hmm. yeah,
it never really gets boring to watch. Like it is pretty interesting. That's not really where it falls. The characters are kind of where I struggle with, where it's like...
They get grating at times.
Yeah.
They get grating, and then, like, the stuff with her ability to do math and the cop's descent into madness when it's been, like... It seems like it's been, like, 15 hours. It seems he's reacting like he's been in there for 6 months.
Quentin's flip... When he all of a sudden is like very clearly the bad guy,
yeah,
was
you mean
really
the beginning when you find out he's a cop?
Wow.
Oh. Goodbye, half our potential audience.
You think though that he's like leading the group and like bringing people together at the beginning and like saying, okay, hey, we got to hold it together. What's your thing? What's your thing?
Yeah,
he's like trying to put together the mystery, and then at the end he's just like, I will kill anybody that disagrees with me.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
How awfully fascist.
The reversal was okay. I liked him as the... I liked him in the beginning part. I did.
Yeah.
I wanted to... Obviously, it was going to be... You know, anyone could die at any moment. But, it was just like a drastic twist with him. Everyone just became very, like, accentuated. And I don't know. I still can't get over the fact that the doctor is, like... I couldn't accept the doctor was also the conspiracy theorist. Like
she's the least well drawn of the characters, but I think part of the way that this movie was designed and part of the way this movie was written was to subvert audience expectations for what the characters are.
Oh, Frank just died a little inside.
What's that?
I said Frank just died a little inside.
Well, because like, okay, so this cop shows up and he takes charge and he wants to, you know, he seems like he wants everybody to work together, but he has a dark edge to him the entire movie. I don't know if you're ever going to go back and watch this again, but the first thing that we see is his hands are covered in blood when he reaches up over the door to pull himself into the room.
Mm. Yeah.
And he has this like menacing edge to him the entire time that... like his relationship with Nicole DeBoer, whose character
Star
is
Trek's
named.
Nicole DeBoer.
We're 13 minutes in. I was taking record. A personal bet on my own.
This is
in my
the
own
biggest,
head.
I think this is one of the bigger Star Trek.
Oh
alums.
Yeah.
Well, she wasn't an alum at the time, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, she was. I think she went from that to Deep Space Nine, right?
Yeah. Pretty sequentially, but yeah. And then David Hewlett, who plays the guy who used to work in the office, was on Stargate and Stargate Atlantis forever.
Forever. Hmm.
He was good. I liked him.
Do we need a Stargate noise?
Yes.
I don't know what a Stargate
noise
would be.
It's the sound of the gate dialing and opening. Come on.
Start working on the Stargate.
No one knows Stargate that well. Like, Matt, could you be our Stargazer?
I mean, if you want me to. I will assume that mantle, but it's double duty though. You got to pay me time and a half.
What's the sound effect going to be? I think it's got to be
it's the space butthole.
No, it's the 8-yard line of the two officers in the beginning talking about Kurt Russell, and then we're like, you didn't hear? This kid shot himself with his gun. It's just that sped up to like 100.
Oh God. Well, you were saying.
But yeah, Quentin and Levin they're kind of like having this like big brother little sister sort of like dynamic interplay, and in any other movie that's kind of what it would be.
Oh, I thought it was like a romance. I took it.
Well,
as
that's
like
the thing.
A,
She's
well,
like a high schooler. She's like a child.
Yeah.
So and with knowing that, it takes on this much more menacing angle to it really, really fast. It may be the fact that I've seen this a couple of times, but my view of the movie is that these characters are far more flawed than you would think at the very beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. And part of what the movie is trying to do is being like, in any other movie, this would be this person. And, and subverting as you pull the layers away.
Pretty early on. I mean, once the doctor enters the Fritz and like every, I feel like you're pretty, like nobody here is equipped to succeed at whatever it is, this feat that they're doing. Like, I think Halloway's the name of the doctor. I don't know what prison she's named after, but like one of the notes that I had was like, she's ready to storm the Capitol like tomorrow. Like she's just dialed into all the conspiracy shit and is like, everything has to have this higher like purpose of like everything getting engineered and how, but which is great setup for how much she breaks when she really learns that this is just this weird bureaucratic fuck up.
Yeah. Well, and also, but it's all, but what I found interesting watching it this time, it is very much the conspiracy mind of the late 90s.
Yeah.
Sort of juxtaposed to the conspiracy theory mind of like today, where, you know, that's much more fueled by the internet and much more specific. I feel like the conspiracy theories of the 90s were just sort of an amorphous, they're all out to get you kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, in the 90s, it was the system.
Yes.
And now it's the elites.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's the billionaires and the actors that are, you know,
the lizard pedophiles.
Drinking the blood of children. Yes.
Oh, God.
But, you know, now
we just lost the other half of our audience.
Right. Well,
Matt, there's a Joe Rogan style splice of all the things you've said down the road in your future.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, we get to this point where it's not even really clear what success is in the cube.
Right.
Like it is infuriating to me as somebody who just wants to know why.
Yeah.
There is no why in this movie at all.
Yeah.
No.
Like, they pretend there's a why because they do kind of get up their own ass a little bit in the sort of, you know, it's the system's fault, you know, nothing really means anything or everything means everything and there's no in between.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really frustrating to me that there's never that reveal at the end. It's like, this was the purpose of this. There is zero catharsis in this movie.
Yeah, it's very Twilight Zone in that way, where...
Funny you brought that up, Connor, but continue.
No, please go ahead.
Yeah, no, so I was thinking about this where some of it we were talking about, it's like, oh, the way that the pacing of the whole movie is kind of, it's a little bit weird. And I was thinking at the time, oh, this would really make probably a solid like Twilight Zone or Outer Limits episode. So I did a little bit of digging and found out that part of this was kind of based on a Twilight Zone episode called Five Characters in Search of an Exit.
No shit.
Stuck inside of a cylinder.
Geometry strikes
and
again.
It's five people who are stuck inside of this cylinder who have no idea who they are with relation to anybody else and are trying to figure out how to escape. And depending on how we feel about spoilers, I can tell you what happens to them. But Cube is almost like Cylinder in 90 minutes with no final reveal.
Mm-hmm. I also got 2009 Predators vibes from this. Did anyone see Predators? Middle one that Robert Rodriguez produced? It's not bad, but it's basically like it's all of these different mercenaries from different like factions around the world wake up in the jungle and they don't know how they got there or anything like that, and they have to find each other and work together because predators are hunting them. So it's like similar enough in that sort of, and it just jumps in. There's no like, and that was one thing I really appreciated where I'm like, oh shit, we're really just going to be in this cube the whole time. That scene though, Peter, you're talking about where they have that, to me, one of the best parts was the conversation about how there is no mastermind behind everything.
Oh,
the fact that it's this, because that's my like conspiracy theory of it all, is just the fact that it's like nobody's pulling any strings. We're all just kind of like different levels of rich idiots. Like we're, you know, and the fact that like this machine is just kind of going, its original intention is long since forgotten, and now we're just kind of like stuck in this like automated process that is not benefiting anyone. It's not doing anything. No one's really like learning anything from this. That was amazing. I really like that. The one thing I was really worried about when I started this was like, okay, it's probably going to be aliens by the end, and there's going to be like a Dark City style reveal where they get to one side and it's space and whatnot. And then like the third line of the movie is the doctor being like, it's aliens. And I'm like, oh, it's not aliens. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, and that's A, I wouldn't do the aliens to you right after we did Dark City. That would just be silly. I remember seeing this when I was like 12, 13, and that scene being like, that's what it is. That's all what it is, man. And having that be a very, very compelling, because like it's the conspiracy theories of the 90s, and like the existential dread of the 90s was like, we're all just on this treadmill and it's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And is this all there is to life? I thought that was really, really well done. Especially as like, and then further, like as a science fiction idea, as like this machine its only purpose is to build itself.
Yeah,
is fascinating to me.
Yeah,
I mean that's part of like the French Canadian-ness of it, of just like. It's just that is what it is that it got built the way that it is, and nobody knows why, because nobody was ever part of, nobody knew enough about any of the things they were working on to actually get the full picture of it.
Yeah, no one person knows enough about how the thing works.
Yeah,
see, I was pulling for the aliens or when like bureaucracy got involved. I was just pulling for the two guys, the two head scientists from the cabin in the woods, just sitting there going, oh shit, they did it again. Yeah. Okay.
Well, if that's a storyline that you're looking for, I can refer you to Cube Zero, the prequel to Cube.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Where, you can't make more to this.
Where they do the dumb thing of telling
there
you
there
are three cubes.
There's a cubilogy.
Were they at least titled Cube Squared and Cube Cubed?
Even better than that, it's Cube Squared, Hypercube, and they're stuck in a Tesseract. And it's all like, it's all like quantum physics and how time being fucked up. And then Cube Zero is just exactly Cube, but it's a cube.
And then, last year in 2021, a Japanese company basically remade Cube, and we watched the trailer today, and it looks like it's just shot for shot, just with Japanese actors. It's wild.
That's what I would imagine.
See, I wanted. I think I. It stopped being fucked up enough for me at a certain point where I would have loved really, I would have loved it to get crazy abstract where like they walk into the room and they see themselves just waking up or some crazy shit or just other stuff they could have walked into where it's like, I kept thinking, I'm like, well, they're going to walk into a room where somebody's dead. Like, just like, it's just like, how do they not see a single other corpse? There have to be other people in this thing that they don't run into.
Yeah. I had a thought where I was like, what would be really, really awesome and really, really ballsy right now is if they had a Shaun of the Dead moment.
Yes.
Where they run into an exact same group as them and they just pass them and they just like meet the same room and they're like, oh, sorry, pardon me, we're going this way. Oh, well, yeah. I
wasn't surprised by this, but I agree. I was imagining in this viewing like other groups of people in other parts of the cube trying to negotiate their
even
escape
just,
from the
even
camp.
Just as something as simple as you don't see anyone, you just hear someone scream. Like little, there's just, they left a lot on the table of what you can do with this concept. And I guess they were just weren't interested, but like for a movie that like you are looking for really ways to vary it up every step of the way, like there's a lot more that could have been interesting. It's weird they all find each other as soon as they wake up, and then that's the whole group. And I guess that's the point, is like there seems to be some grand design about putting all these people within a room of each other so that they would find each other. But like, I kind of, if you really want to lean into the could it be random thing, you'd have it just be like, these are just the people that found each other, so we might as well follow them. Like, this is a rarity that people get a chance to form a group like this, because most people die pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that there was a sort of implied experiment that the cube is it's like if you put the exact right people together with your exact right skill set, but give them no further information, can they work well enough together to figure out how to get out?
The movie's trying to be every version of what the plot could be. Yes. At the same time, which means that they can't pull on any one thread strong enough to really like latch onto anything or go down any interesting rabbit holes.
Which is why it's simultaneously way too far up its own ass, but it's the perfect. I'm way too stoned at 3 p.m. and I just turned on Sci-Fi and now I'm just thinking all the thoughts about the universe movie.
Like, Peter, it's a Wednesday.
He works from home.
It's Wednesday. Oh, guys, I haven't been outside in like 4 days. It's also freezing here in Texas, so we're like, it's like not healthy to be outside right now.
Fair enough.
Oh yeah.
So it's F-250s just come flying at you the second you step outside your door.
You also have to wait for the exit cube to line up properly. So
that's also true.
We should add those sound effects throughout the episode. The like, whatever the sound of shit going on around us.
It raises a lot of questions. What I'm almost positive in my belief is that none of the other movies answer them in a satisfactory way. But I may defer to whoever's seen those movies or at least read the plot synopses of them.
Yeah, I mean, so in Cube Zero, at the risk of spoilers.
I thought that was the title, Cube Zero, the risk of spoilers.
I haven't seen it. I watched a YouTube breakdown of all of the Cube movies just so I would be, just in case somebody asked a question like this. But basically, there's two parallel plots. One's the people in the Cube, and the other one is these two guys whose job it is to like keep an eye on what's going on in the Cube. And you wind up finding out that many of the people that are in the Cube are people that worked on the Cube and found out too much. Like, Kazan's condition, where he's like, obviously, I mean, he's definitely like coded to be autistic, but
we got
to
talk about that too.
Is that something that we would handle very differently now? Yep.
Well, the way the Japanese did it is they just made him like an 8-year-old boy who's like a genius.
Oh, yeah. There you go. It's
much
keep
better.
It simple.
Yeah.
But the reason why he's like that is because he was in the world of Cube Zero. I'm not saying this is canon. I'm not saying it makes any sense. But yeah. he was a tech that found out too much and had his memories erased. And in erasing his memories, basically made him like that.
Yeah, that's
it's not great.
No.
See, all of that ruins it for me. Any more you do with this, and anything yeah. you tell me beyond, like even just what they, even just the fact that the one guy designed the outer shell kind of ruins it for me. Like I almost, part of me doesn't even want them to find an outer shell. But like, it's just, this is such a cool concept, and I would have gone so many other directions with it. Where it's like, even just talking right now, where Peter, you're like, there's a 8-year-old there. I was like, what if they halfway through the movie they open a door and there's like a crying baby in the middle of the floor, and you're like, what the fuck is this? And they have to, they're like, they pick up the kid, and then they got to go through the sound, the room that triggers via sound, and they are hoping the kid stays asleep, like that, like random shit, like it just make it fucking weird without just being like so nihilistic.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It also the film gets very concerned with its own mechanics, like all of the math stuff that clearly somebody who had studied prime factorials or factorizations or whatever was really, or just the math of cubes, got very interested in making the math work in what was that? Not Looper. What was that other time travel movie that came out a few years ago?
Primer.
Primer. There's definitely like a Primer edge to this where it's like, how would it really work?
So according to Wikipedia, the fictional cube device in the film was conceived by mathematician David W. Pravica, who also served as the film's math consultant.
Well, there you
go. The way this movie
did all the math
fetishizes math.
They did the math.
Is that's really where it started to lose me, where it's like,
really?
She's doing such, it's like, it's the way Marvel movies have Tony Stark figure stuff out. It's just like, or I'll give you one better, it's how Zach Galifianakis figures out how to count cards in The Hangover. Like,
yes,
it becomes a superpower. Yes, it's yeah. just,
well,
it's...
I think it's less of a superpower, because if nothing else, you have her, like, having to use the button to scratch numbers into a piece of like soft metal in the construction of the cube to actually do the math.
But the yeah. amount of just, I couldn't help but laugh at just how much math is on that thing that she's etching into.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
she's going so fast. It reminded me of, there's a fucking great clip. It's one of the CSIs. What's the CSI with the girl who's got the two pig? She's got like the Pippi Longstocking hair.
NCIS.
So there's a moment in that where like someone's hacking their system, and her and another guy are trying to stop them. You can find this on YouTube. Matt, you know where I'm going with this.
She pulls out another keyboard
as an IT
starts
hacking.
No, worse.
Not even another keyboard.
Worse. It's her and the other guy to help her out are both with two hands each typing on the same keyboard to stop the hacker. And it's like that kind of thing where it's like, we're just in the math shots of the movie, and you're gonna get through it and figure it out and whatnot. The math was just too much, too many times they went to the math for their solution, and I'm like, the prime number thing's interesting, the one or two things are pretty interesting with the numbers and whatnot, but like, I don't know. I just kept checking out because the way they treated her ability to do math when she introduces herself as like, oh, I'm nobody, I'm a born person. It's like, no. You remember every single number you've ever seen in your entire goddamn fucking life. Like, come on. Like, that's clearly something you say right here.
I want to talk about her Levin's characterization a little bit, because she is kind of all over the map to me in the way that we were talking about Quentin before, where she goes from being this like innocent schoolgirl kind of type at the very beginning, who's terrified out of her mind, and within like two scenes she's playing up this like sultry confidence and then jumping around until this other thing, and then she's a total bitch to
super quippy, and then
she's like has no patience for Kazan. I'm interested to hear what you guys thought about like the way that her in particular was portrayed mostly partially because Matt knows how.
What?
It's Nicole DeBoer. It's from Star Trek.
Yeah.
I want to know. So, I want to know what Matt thinks about the Star Trek.
We're gonna break the button.
I will say just before Matt jumps in here with his Star Trek-itudes, my wife came in during like one sequence where she was featured prominently, and I like paused the movie and we chatted for a second, and I was like, "You don't want to watch this." And she goes, no, wait, I bet I can figure everything out right now. She's the main character because she has the best makeup. And I was like, not really, but you're also not wrong. But what? Yeah. You don't want to watch this, leave. So that was my only comment on her characterization.
That's brilliant.
It's funny. One short digression. I spent the last 36 hours with one of the worst stomach bugs I've ever fucking had in my entire life. I looked exactly like, not even like 6 hours ago, I looked exactly like David Hewlett when the light hits his face and he's just like pale.
Oh yeah, the bright
just, like,
light hits his
dark
face.
Circles
yeah.
under his eyes, and I'm just like, yeah. That's I hit a little close to home when I did my second view today.
Dried her, blood on the corner
her
of your
character,
mouth.
I didn't mind as much. You're right, it's a drastic jump, but luckily it seems to coincide with her. The more useful she becomes, the more confident and therefore like sultry and bitchy or whatnot. I grew to really like her, I will say. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting too, because like when she really starts being an asshole is when all of the adults around her start acting like real assholes, especially when Quentin and Holloway sort of get at it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Matt, you had thoughts.
Well, no, I was... it wasn't specifically her... like, obviously, yeah, she gets angry with people, but by that point in the movie, I'm kind of more on her side anyway, because I hate Holloway by that point. Quentin, I wasn't a fan of to necessarily begin with, and he's already starting to fray apart. And, like, you know, everybody else is kind of along for the ride for the most part. So I was like, yeah, I would be fucking frustrated too. But, like, one of the things that I did notice was pretty much in every sequence of whatever cube they're in is that there's a different character has to carry the idiot ball. Somebody has to be stupid beyond reason to make the thing happen.
It's the Always Sunny format.
Well, but, and so that was the stuff that bothered me. Like, there's a lot of shit that happens in that last scene where it's like, nobody's, come on. Like, you didn't hear Quentin, like, trudging through with whatever the fuck he's got before he, like, gets right up behind her. And all these weird things that, like, we were so focused on people making noise. We were so focused on, like, paying attention to your surroundings. We were so focused on all these things. And it all just goes out the window in, like, the last moments. And just it, like that, like, and it reminded me of parts earlier on where just, you know, well, you know, we need some conflict, so let's just have, you know, Holloway go off on a thing for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So that
so
was
I
the
will
stuff
say
that annoyed
the,
me.
The only small defense of that is that they foreshadow in like the fifth minute of the movie. They're like, we have no food, no water. We're all going to start to go crazy here within. Yeah. You know, a day or so, and they do a really good job keeping up with the makeup. Like, everybody by the end has like incredibly
chapped lips. Yep.
You know, really gaunt eyes. Like, I was actually very impressed that they were able to keep track of all that sort of as the movie progressed. That all being said, I have no idea if that would, you know, make you lose your hearing for a 230-pound guy creeping up behind you with a crowbar. Like, yeah.
So. Let's talk about the ending a little bit. I'm curious what you guys think, where you thought it was going, and then where it ended up.
Well, in my initial viewing back in 1999, probably, my assumption was everybody dies, because that was just the way things sort of happened in movie, in especially like this flavor of like Kafka-esque science fiction film of back in the day, because like. Like the point, like even back then, I knew that like the point was not to have any answers, and you know, also, but also sort of the flip side of that, being somewhat naive when Levin gets stabbed, I was definitely very like upset by that.
I really liked
when you realize what stabbed her was one of the door handles that we've seen a few times.
Yeah.
Great moment.
Yeah.
But as far as them actually finding an exit and Kazan getting out and then the other guy getting sent back to, I don't know, the ending that it had. Should they have ever found an exit?
I think they I love them finding an exit. I love there being the light at the end of the tunnel and having it being taken away. I hated Worth sitting down at the end and being like, there's nothing out there for me to live for. Like, who fucking cares?
Yeah.
like, there's a lot of world out there. Go find something.
He has a whole porn collection that he'll never see again if he doesn't leave the cube.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone knows you don't die until you've gotten rid of your porn collection, and that he made the cardinal sin of letting
himself
die.
Holloway is really unpleasant about that. There are some aspects in which we tend to think of the 90s as being very similar to the era we're living in now, but there are certain ways where like little cultural shit will pop up watching movies from back then that will remind me ways in which things were a little bit backward back then.
I bet you the writers, if they were to describe Holloway, would be like, they'd use the word shrill, non-ironically.
Yeah. I mean, well, like, as I was running through the notes, there was a lot of like ellipses comments of like, the cop is handsy, some of the dialogue is rough, the acting, especially from Holloway, is theater, and like they're like just like going down the line of like there are certain and which is like some of that stuff is obviously my reading of it was that you're set up to dislike Holloway so that you kind of feel bad when she dies, because you're like, oh, well, I mean, she didn't necessarily deserve to die, and she wasn't doing anything, like, actively wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's still...
She becomes more likable by that point, for sure, I think. Mostly because Quentin becomes the one, by juxtaposition, you hate so much more, you have to like her a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I do want to give you guys a couple of my predictions for what I thought. Here's like really quickly, I was sizing up the movie. I'm like, here's where things I think are going to go. One, always knew they were going to find the guy's acid face body again. It was going to be this big. I thought it was going to be like the low moment of the movie. It kind of was. It seemed to happen a little later than that. But like, yes, they're going to get back in that room. I thought there was going to be other examples of that. I thought, when they knock Quentin out, like when they trick him into the floor, he was going to wake up, and we were going to have something of a Jack Torrance wandering through the hedge maze scene of Quentin in like bloodlust mode, trying to catch them, and falls into like an awesome trap, and he just gets like his due that way.
Oh,
I don't know why he had to show up. I don't know how he found them. The whole point was he was useless without all these people. Like, do not have him actually be capable. And then the other thing that I was so sure the movie was going to go to, because I was so hung up on Worth having a head injury when they find him, that I thought the ending of the movie was going to be Worth being the sole survivor in a box, knocked out because he got hurt in the head, and like he wakes up to a different person who just showed up and goes, and it suddenly starts all up again. I don't know why this movie has any of that cyclical feel to it. This movie should make you feel way crazier than it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, actually.
I will say, when I realized, like, 20 minutes in, that I was only 20 minutes in, I expected, like, in the next the next 20 minutes, a massive shift. And there never is.
No.
It's pretty straightforward the rest of the way through. But I expected there to be like, okay, they figured out the sort of sequencing of the rooms. They figured out that there are traps. They figured out how to navigate those traps. Cool. Now that they're competent, let's throw a completely new twist in there, and all of a sudden they're being chased by something. Or they make it to the end and they get out, only to realize that they have to go back in for something.
Yeah.
Like, I was expecting, like, some sort of thing to really twist right in the middle, and there never really is.
Yeah, the stakes never rise at, ever. It's always the same format.
It's a slow boil because the actual conflict of the movie is the way that all five people's heads keep butting together and the ways that they need to figure out how to work together to survive. Because the thing is, they don't like each other. They don't know each other. They're not friends. They're not people that grow like emotionally or spiritually closer together during this ordeal. They're just people that kind of depend on each other for different skill sets. And that's the thing that winds up boiling over. I think this movie has much more in common with a play than it does with a movie.
Oh yeah.
Well, it's a TV show. Like it does feel like I think the Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
Similarity is really apt because it does just feel like a really long TV show where the stakes are what they are from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. They don't need to grow because they are a contained thing. And the next episode will build on that, or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Twilight Zone, so you'll never see it again. But it's only 30 minutes.
Exactly. So that to me is just like, it feels like they had a good idea. They got hung up, like real hung up on the math, and tried to squeeze in some big thoughts about like the system and the man.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what we ended up with.
I think some of it's the limitations of the budget, because this movie was only cost $350,000 to make.
How many cubes did they build?
Cubes? One. They one. Built one cube.
There's no way they didn't build one cube.
They built one cube.
Mm. Yeah.
And they had a wall. They had like one cube and one wall. So whenever you see them like looking into the next room with the wall with the wall in the background,
right. Literally all you need. It's perfect. Yeah. I applauded the production design because you could just do it over.
I want to talk about the cube. You mentioned the door handle earlier.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the most genius like directorial moves at the very beginning of this movie is the first thing you see any character do is open up the door, pull it out, slide it down, crawl through, and then have it close behind him. So you understand like all of the details of the way the characters have to interact with the world first thing. And you
it's
get
a perfect
the sound.
Room. Because the room's designed where it makes sense if it's any theory you could possibly have, this would be the room for it. Peter, I think I just thought of your mid-movie twist or like your like up the stakes moment. It changes the second half, but what if suddenly her math doesn't check out, she goes into the wrong room and leads them there and she doesn't know why and she's trying to figure it out and then she's like, oh God, I know why. And she looks scared on her face. And she's like, the room is 6 inches smaller on all sides than it was before. And she's like, the rooms are shrinking every single time it resets. And then for the second half of the movie, it just becomes this tighter space and tighter space. To the end,
so
the last guy is just, is just crawling through these like little things. And it's just like, that's what you do. You give
so
that.
Then the movie's just called Compactor and not
Cube. Compactor.
One thing's for certain,
so
we're all going to be a lot thinner.
Like this movie should, this movie, if it's going to be this nihilistic, just utterly fuck with me and make it one of those movies that every time a Reddit post is like, what's the movie that scarred you as a kid? I'm like, it's Cube. It's not Cube right now. This is not the movie that scars you as a kid. It's pretty fucked up and it's like really like interesting, but like this should like ruin people as a concept.
And in order to ruin people, there should be like a body in every cube that they walk into.
Yeah. Yes.
And I wonder if it did at the time, because like you think about all the movies that came after this, like Saw. What was that? There's a movie that came out.
Hostel.
Well, I mean, that's a little bit less like self-contained. What was the movie that came out a couple years ago where there's like there's like prisoners in a tower and there's a
The Raid?
No, it's prisoners in a tower and there's like a thing full of food that lowers down the middle. It's this Italian. The platform.
That sounds
the platform.
Awesome.
It's
Snowpiercer. It's like Snowpiercer.
It's got a similar thing to Snowpiercer, like a self-contained existential horror kind of thing.
Human Centipede or Judge Dredd or.
Yeah. The Platform was one of those movies that lots of people were talking about and very excited about. I think it came out on Netflix came out on Netflix March 20th, 2020, so I have not seen it yet. Because that's when I instituted my 2-year running no bummers rule.
Yeah.
And
then you made us watch The Cube.
A rule I was willing to break for the sake of this podcast.
Oh my god. I will say the fact that there's no moment where it's just a scene of them opening a door, looking in, seeing a pair of severed legs still standing in the middle of the floor, and then having them just like quietly close the door is like, again, this, you should, if you have this concept, you write a fucking bulleted list of like, here's all the crazy shit you do with this, and then make it work in the script. Like, I don't need this to be so much about them arguing all the time. That's the soul of it. You really need that to be the driving force, but like, there's so many gags and interesting, fun, crazy, weird directions to take this in, rather than just like these not the five most interesting people to put in this scenario when it should be.
There absolutely should have been a moment where that happens, but it's with the chunks of Albertson, like the guy from the very beginning that gets that's one of the better movie death scenes.
It's pretty
time,
good.
Maybe?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the good enough that Paul W.S. Anderson just ripped it off.
Entirely. My God.
Yeah.
In what?
Resident Evil.
Resident Evil.
Like the getting cubed by the thing.
And Rick and Morty. Rick and Morty did the same thing, I think.
But because it's become a... Yeah.
But how great would it be if the death they walk in on, and that like they open a door and they see someone dead, it's like a death that you're like, I don't know how this death happened, where it's like the person is like... stretched across all of the walls, and you're like, "What the fuck happened?"
It's a pair of boots in the middle of the floor, and just gore on the ceiling.
But like a stretched corpse around every single wall and ceiling and floor, and you're like, "Oh my god, this looks like the worst thing."
It's just a pair of hands. Only hands are like,
yeah, random crazy shit.
Nothing else, just hands.
See, that's the thing. Yeah. Like that doesn't, and this may just be the way I was looking, but like if I saw that, like that wouldn't. I have the same reaction that I have when you guys are talking about this. I would start laughing.
No, you should,
which is good.
But
yeah,
well, but I feel if you want to maintain the dread, like one of the things you could have, like they get into there and there's this like desiccated, dehydrated corpse that's got to have been there for years, and then they have to start to wonder how long this whole thing's been running and like how long
that
they could potentially be stuck there.
They
it's
also
not gory,
find
it's just
that
disturbing as fuck. Like,
yeah, that's brilliant.
I mean, Frank, we could just do a fucking checklist.
I think we have to write Cube. This is so great.
Yeah, no, we can do cubed.
It's just cubed. I think it's just cubed.
It's just cubed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then cube four.
Cube but the four. D is lowercase.
No, you do cube four gross tonnage. I think that's how you have that the next. But yeah, it's a
triangle.
No, it's got to be pyramid, because for 3D shapes.
I guess.
I mean, this explains why you were very frustrated by the math portion of the movie.
Hang on, let me get my fire extinguisher.
But yeah, it's a great concept. I was never bored. I was annoyed at times by some of the character bullshit, and I feel like any of the movies in this universe that have preceded or followed it would do anything for me.
So Connor, have you seen all of the cubes?
No. I've seen bits and pieces of Cube 2 years ago on the Sci-Fi Channel, and I found it very confusing because I was just sort of channel flipping.
And again, that is Cube squared hypercube?
Yeah, Cube 2.
Okay.
Cube squared hypercube. And then, like Wonderful. I said, I watched like a breakdown of what happens in Cube Zero, just because I was interested. There's like a weird like
these have like Fast and Furious titles.
Yeah. Well, is it Q that Cube Zero doesn't have any calories?
God damn it! But it's got twice the caffeine.
Go to the penalty box.
The boo box.
The boo box.
Not the boo box.
It's a power play.
I didn't have time to change up my buttons.
Yeah. I guess what I'm curious about, and you may or may not know this, but do they keep with the idea of this is just this giant bureaucratic WPA project that became a nightmare hellscape? Or is at some point someone shows us the architect and he tells us, ergo, it's systemic anomaly?
There
like,
is a moment in Cube 2 that is that, basically.
Yeah.
And then in Cube... No, I'm sorry. In Cube Zero, that is that.
Okay.
And then in Cube Two, the protagonist escapes, and she, like, she gets basically teleported to this, like, obviously government web, warehouse, and, a secret agent just walks up to her and shoots her in the head, and that's credits. Which, it's very much in line with the movie with Cube.
Yeah.
And the sort of Kafka-esque Samuel Beckett-style storytelling, but...
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking a lot about Samuel Beckett during this, just because I, you know, he's a guy I think about occasionally. I was like, this is sort of Beckett-esque. And now that we've talked about this for almost an hour, it's really not. It's really not beautiful in any kind of way.
No.
Doesn't say a lot about the human condition. Just sort of talks about, like, what if you put assholes in a room?
Yeah, very much.
Because I did sort of, like, put myself in the cube to be like, how would I handle this? I do exactly the same thing, just be nicer about it.
So it's trying to do, it wants to be a microcosm of society, kind of. And then it just doesn't, like, is that really what the creators think society consists of? Is it just everyone is so cruel?
Because they threw in, they partially wanted to explore that concept, but then they also partially wanted to explore the concept that it's not a microcosm and there is no purpose to it. And they also, there's a lot of competing themes, and I think that that's kind of what can cause the frustration.
Yeah, and the fact that it feels like if you're going to not pick a lane, you can't also try to say something.
Yeah.
You gotta.
I don't know if this movie's trying to say anything.
But it has too many scenes where that scene about how it's like nobody's in control. I'm like, okay, is this the metaphor for life scene where everyone, you can talk about religion, you can talk about government, you can talk about conspiracies.
Here's the fix at the end.
Round the edges. So
you add literally.
No, they already made
Sphere. You add literally a 10-second scene at the very, very end as Kazan. Like, walks into the light, and then you see a cockroach coming out of a cube, and that's it. And all of a sudden, it's a Kafka metaphor. And they were all just bugs in a maze, and it doesn't matter because they were bugs.
Yeah, I would take that. Can we just real quick touch on the fact that, like, I really did not like watching how he played the mentally handicapped
Rain
person.
Man. Yeah. Did not age well.
No, it's not Rain Man. It is Simple Jack. Like, it is
he has the even higher math ability of, like, being able to quickly drum up the, like, that's because it's that the quote unquote idiot savant archetype
thing. Yeah.
Did everyone else know that was coming in that moment? Where, right before when she's like, no one could calculate that. It's crazy. And I'm like, off screen, we're going to hear him say, like, 3 or something.
Yeah.
And he's like, 4, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, when I remember seeing it, when I saw it as a kid, and I sort of glommed on to, like, everybody here has a skill of some kind. We're gonna figure out what those are. And actually, I kind of thought that, like, the mid movie complication was him. Like, all of a sudden, like, they're sort of like, they're on a roll. They know what they're doing. We're gonna throw in this guy that needs way more help than anybody else does. Can you handle getting him out, basically? I think it's... and I think that's what it's supposed to read as. But... Again, I don't think it did particularly well.
I kept thinking along the lines of Saw, where he was going to reveal himself to be not... Mm. He was playing it so weird, where I'm like, well, he's a normal guy. There's no way he's really playing this... mental condition like this. He's going to be like a guy who's like, he knows more of this and he's been fucking with them or some shit. I went too far down that.
His limp is going to clean up and he's going to light his cigarette and they'll say, you know, Mr. Kobayashi, come with me.
There's like 4 scenes where I was like watching him in the background. I'm like, this is going to be the moment he says something really like proper, like it's coming.
I see you are a very clever girl to figure out my prime factorials.
Well, and again, like, this is one of those things where if this movie was made today, like, exactly what his condition is would have they would have a name for it. She would have experience treating it. You know, like, because there definitely are people in the world that are on the spectrum that are exceptionally good at math. But they just say he's like mentally challenged or mentally deficient or something
they
like
have
that.
No idea. mentally deficient.
Yeah, I think some not so great of 1999 words.
They call him some fucked up shit.
Yeah they do movie. Start tossing around the R word, which I was not thrilled
a
with.
A lot of it is Quentin, which is that's where you. That's
yeah, exactly. If he wasn't explicitly the villain at that point, I'd have less sympathy for it.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of Quentin. Wire being super dangerous. Don't like when he gets twisted up in the Christmas tree shaped wire thing, and also like the first thing that the first kill with the wire fence. This is the first time I was exposed to wire being dangerous. Like really taught wire being dangerous, and that that kind of fucked with me through a good portion of my
I would have fucked with me. Yeah.
Oh yeah,
it's terrifying. I think the wire
that's definitely one of those French things because that's how they cut cheese with wires.
Have you ever seen Audition?
Yes.
Yeah, that's some fucked up shit.
Yeah.
For those playing the home game, Audition's a Japanese horror film, but it involves two characters and wire that you normally use to cut meat and bone.
And next week we're going to be watching Audition.
Next week on a very special episode without Peter.
I need a rom-com so bad.
We do need to be very specific as we go forward with this new podcast venture of ours that we stop picking movies that we inflict on each other. Because
it will become a competition and I will lose first. I will be the first place loser.
But we should also not forget to do that to each other,
occasionally,
too.
Occasionally,
yes. Yeah.
That's part of our charm.
Yeah. All right. I love it.
So, boys,
we're still finding our way.
Thank you for coming on this Cube adventure with me. Do you have any final thoughts?
I know I complained a lot. I did pretty much enjoy it. I'm more frustrated when it is a brilliant concept that falls short of, like, it shoots for the stars but doesn't get there than a movie that's just incompetent. Like, this just could have been a lot more. But what it was still pretty great.
Mm-hmm. Matt?
I think I still enjoyed it. It was a lot more rough around the edges than I remembered it being. But...
Yeah, we completely skipped over. When was the first time you saw Cube?
Oh, God, I mean... I don't think I actually saw it on Sci-Fi Channel, but I sought it out probably college sometime. Was like the period where I was just watching everything. And I remember being really impressed by it. And I think it's still impressive as far as what you do when you're essentially making a bottle show movie of, like, you have these limited resources. How do you tell an entertaining story in 90 minutes? And even despite its roughness, I think that they do a pretty convincing job of it all, at the very least with set design, if nothing else.
Oh, yeah.
Peter.
Does that one close up, real quick, just one close up of the numbers, like really close up of the numbers?
Yeah.
I don't know why I really loved the detail on the numbers. It was like alien and not at the same time. Like it was just fascinating.
It's a really tactile movie. You know what like every touchable surface in the cube rooms feels like.
I can taste the button in my mouth.
So there's one scene where, so they use a button to like help their saliva, like, process.
Love that.
And you know, it's smart, but at the same time there's a scene midway through the movie where Holloway almost chokes on her button, and I really 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 just wanted her to choke on the damn button. I wanted the movie to just like take that left turn and be like, yeah, you can, it's not the traps that'll kill you, it's just yourselves.
And they, it would be great if they think the room did that to her.
Yes. Because they did it first. They thought it was some poison gas, and she's just joking on the button.
That might actually... I completely forgot that scene happened. That might actually be one of the better scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
I give this movie a C+ because it swings for the fences in everything but plot. It has no real interest in plot. It has a lot of interest in design and concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't really care what it's about. It doesn't really care about dialogue. It doesn't really care about acting. But I found it to be enjoyable, and I think that this is like a really good 30-minute TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the greatest casts of like Canadian stage actors assembled in a film.
Oh yeah.
It's very, everybody is definitely playing to the cheap seats.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for showing us.
Thank you.
Because I never would have watched it. It's
also really easy to watch if you're even remotely curious about watching it.
Again, yes. Free on YouTube. You could watch this right now.
I was listening to a podcast recently where they referenced this movie as one of the best junk sci-fi movies. I think that's kind of just a fun genre. So, yeah.
We still don't have a sign-off.